So what we're going to do is just give it over to Jason, and he can do his little sum up.
Once again, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So you had your discussion groups on Exodus 12 through 14. That's exciting. I hope that you enjoyed those, that you had some nice time talking about the Passover, crossing of the Red Sea. Let's just bring out a few ideas that I heard discussed in your groups. Some of you were talking about spiritual leadership and Moses there at the Red Sea. So did you find any interesting principles of spiritual leadership that came out of that time when Moses was kind of confronted by the people? Did you notice anything there that was significant about what he did? Yeah, so he was part of them. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So he led with them. He was with them. He wasn't, you know, standing somewhere else and apart from them. Yep. So he gives an example of faith. Yep. Yep. So he doesn't, you know, run away from their complaining. Just say, I can't handle it. Somebody brought out a really interesting point that I thought was quite helpful. You remember what Moses' big issue was? We talked about it yesterday. His big issue in being the deliverer. How he thought he would be the redeemer, he would be the one to save. And so it's really neat when you just kind of walk through Exodus 14 and you look at what the people say to Moses. So they say there in verse 11, notice the emphasis that there is on Moses, right? The people are focusing this all on him. And it could be very easy for him then to take this as, well, I'm the deliverer. So look at it, verse 10. When Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel, this is Exodus 14, lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. They were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. They said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou then dealt thus with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. So the people keep saying, why have you done this? Right? And we told you this. They keep emphasizing him and these things that he has done. And it's really neat to see, you know, old Moses would have seen himself as the Redeemer, as the Deliverer, and yet his response in verse 13 is, fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of Yahweh. Right? This is God's salvation. This has nothing to do with me. I'm not the one who's bringing this to you. Don't complain to me, right? This is God's salvation. I'm the vehicle here who's going to help lead you to that. But that's the only role, really, that I'm playing here. So that's neat to see that that's that principle of spiritual leadership there coming out with Moses, that really, as a spiritual leader, the job is to direct people to God, right? It's not, you know, hey, come to me so that I can answer all your questions or so that I can, like, you know, make everything right. But it is your job to bring people to the Word, ultimately, to prayer, because that is where the answers are really found. All right. How about Psalm 46? Did anybody get to touch that one? Psalm 46? Yeah, there was a lot to talk about. So let's just run through a couple of questions or a couple of connections because I think they're helpful. Psalm 46, here's the first connection. It shows up in verse 2. Psalm 46, verse 2, see if you notice anything there. It says, verse 2, therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. So, what do you see there? So, dry land appearing, the mountains are carried into the midst of the sea, right? Now, if you actually look that up in Hebrew, and you might have a marginal note for this, the midst of the sea is really, in Hebrew, the heart of the sea. And I think a lot of margins say that, the heart of the sea. Some newer translations might actually say it too. It's interesting, then, that you can compare. We won't do this, but I'll give you the reference if you want it. If you go to Exodus 15 and verse 8, this is the song of Moses after the Red Sea. Exodus 15, verse 8, he uses that same phrase about the Egyptians. The Egyptians were cast into the heart of the sea. Exodus 15, verse 8. Same words in the Hebrew. It's Exodus 15, verse 8. And really, a mountain represents a nation, right? So mountains being cast in the sea, I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at. So that's Exodus 15 and verse 8. Now, it's also interesting when you look at when this deliverance is supposed to happen. Just come on down now to verse 5 in Psalm 46. Notice when the deliverance is expected in Psalm 46. Psalm 46, verse 5 says, God is in the midst of her, she shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. Now, look at your margin. When, and that right early is kind of a difficult translation to figure out what that means, right? What does it actually mean? When the morning appears. Do you know that the actual Hebrew there is leaf note boker? So like if you're going to say good morning to somebody in Hebrew, you'd say boker tov, right? So boker means morning. So yeah, isn't that nice? So you can all say that to each other tomorrow. Or you can still say it for the next like 17 minutes. So there you go, boker tov. So that's what you would say, good morning. So the words here, the exact words, leaf note boker, and it should be translated as to the face of the morning. So it means like before the morning, essentially. That literally it means to the face of the morning, but you know, it's a Hebrew idiom. It essentially means before the morning comes. It only shows up, this exact phrase, leaf note boker, only shows up one other place in Scripture. And that is Exodus 14:27. Exodus 14:27, only other place where that phrase appears. And it reads as follows. Exodus 14, verse 27. Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea returned to his strength when the morning appeared. That's your phrase, leaf note boker, when the morning appeared. Okay, now, Psalm 46 and verse 10, there's a lot of these, we won't do too many. I don't want to get too many of them in here. Psalm 46 and verse 10, be still and know that I am God. I think that one's a pretty clear connection. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, is what Moses says. And notice what it goes on to say here in verse 10 of Psalm 46. He says, I will be exalted among the heathen, so among the Gentiles, and I will be exalted in the earth. And I would just suggest to you that a better translation of that, your word earth there is eretz, it could also read as, I will be exalted in the land. So really what you have is it's not saying the same thing twice, I'll be exalted among the heathen and I'll be exalted in the earth. It's saying I'll be exalted among the Gentiles and I'll be exalted among my people, the land. Now, that's interesting because you might remember that throughout the Exodus, there is a very common refrain in which God says, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. And if you follow that throughout, you will notice that he says that to both Pharaoh, and to his own people. You shall know that I am Yahweh, right? And that's exactly what verse 10 is about. I will be exalted among the heathen. I'll be exalted among the land. I'll be exalted in the land. They shall know that I am Yahweh, both the Egyptians and his own people. So if you follow that phrase throughout the Exodus, you'll see that. Okay, so Psalm 46 has these connections. Well, why does it have that? Few of you guys went to Isaiah 31 in your groups, right? I think I remember hearing that. So Isaiah 31 is about whose reign? Isaiah 31 takes place in the reign of Hezekiah. And it's interesting then that you have this Passover language being used at that time. So Isaiah 31 and verse 5 says, as birds flying, so will the Lord of hosts defend Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it, and passing over, he will preserve it. Isaiah 31, verse 5. So you have essentially, in the time of Hezekiah, when the Assyrians invaded, there was this Passover deliverance. If you want another reference, another Passover reference there, here's one more. Isaiah 26 and verse 19. Isaiah 26, verse 19, same time period, Hezekiah, and it says there, Isaiah 26, verse 20 says, listen for the Passover. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation be overpast. Do you hear the Passover? You have to stay in the house. So there's another one. We won't go there. But this is talking about when Hezekiah was saved from the Assyrians. And it just so happened that it took place at Passover time. So it's generally understood that Psalm 46 was written during the reign of Hezekiah. Why do you think he kept looking back to the Exodus? It reminded him of when God saved at the same time and did the same thing. And so God brought a great salvation. His destroying angel was sent out, destroyed the Assyrian army, and protected the Israelites, passed over them, hovered over them, and kept them safe. Now, finally, 1 Peter. Do you find any 1 Peter connections? All right, so what Exodus connections did you see in 1 Peter? We already talked about the girding up of the loins. Sprinkling of the blood, that's interesting. So sprinkling of the blood. You'll see, by the way, that sprinkling of the blood occurs in reference to Passover in 2 Kings, 2 Chronicles. Wait a minute. Uh-oh. This is what happens when you try and do things off the top of your head. 2 Chronicles. Let's see if I can find it. Verse 11, 35 verse 11. 2 Chronicles 35, 11, this is Josiah's Passover. It says, "And they killed the Passover, and the priests sprinkled the blood from their hands, and the Levites flayed them." So you have the sprinkling of the blood in 1 Peter 1 and verse 2. Anything else? Any other Exodus connections in 1 Peter? 2 verse 9, out of the darkness. What's that quoting? What's 1 Peter 2, 9 quoting? You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. That's Exodus 19 and verse 5 and 6, yes. That is when God creates Israel as a nation, right? So now Peter takes it and applies it to those who have been called to the ecclesia. Verse 16 of chapter 1, you have, "Be holy, for I am holy," right? That's a quotation from Leviticus chapter 11 about the clean and unclean animals. And how about verse 19 of chapter 1? "But with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot." So there's all these connections to the Exodus. Here's what's neat about that. We just looked at Psalm 46 and how Hezekiah looked back to the Passover redemption, to the Exodus, and saw that God was going to deliver them, redeem them, just as he had done to the children of Israel when they were coming out of Egypt. Peter looks back and does the same thing about us, that we have been called out of Egypt, we are leaving Egypt, and we are starting our exodus to the promised land as a holy, special people unto God. And so, really, I think there's a twofold value in this. Number one, that these stories are here, not just so that we can learn about them and think, wow, that's neat, but to actually remember God had the victory in those circumstances, and he can and will do the same thing again. And then, to remember that we are undergoing our own exodus. We are coming out of Egypt, and we are heading towards the promised land. And just as the children of Israel murmured, complained, and wanted to go back, that is something that we have to be on our guard for. That same attitude will creep into the ecclesia. We will find ourselves complaining about people. We will find ourselves complaining about events and saying, man, you know, it was better when I didn't have to deal with these people or whatnot. And that is the kind of attitude that destroyed the Israelites. And so we have to be careful. We have to remember to set our eyes on the promised land and in faith walk straight there, nothing wavering.